In previous episodes, we've heard about the earliest records of LGBTQ plus communities in London, the discrimination faced by LGBTQ plus people in the capital when establishing cultural spaces, and two case studies in Vauxhall and Soho. For this, our final episode, I'm joined once again by UCEM Digital Communications Officer Eliza White, who came up with the idea for this podcast series, which marks LGBT plus History Month. So this episode is entitled Disappearing Spaces. Why is that?
So a number of key venues for queer Londoners have closed down in recent years, including several bars specifically for queer women. And that leaves She Bar as the only lesbian specific bar in London. Other examples include the burlesque venue Madame Jojo's, and that had its license revoked by the council after a violent incident. But the way in which the council dealt with this made critics believe the council's reason for doing so was financially driven. Then there are clubs such as Ghetto, First Out and Astoria. They were demolished to make way for Crossrail, an act which Will Self describes as silvery spikes hammered into Soho's vampiric heart.
Yeah, really struck by that Will Self quote, which, you know, vampiric and spikes going in, vampires you generally think of as being evil in most of literature, and therefore that would be a good act, it would be seen perhaps. So it seems quite a hateful thing to write. Is that the case, or have I missed the point?
So it's certainly a very visceral quote. I've sort of interpreted it in a different way. I think what he's referring to is the seedy reputation of Soho, which we discussed in the last episode. I think what he's referring to being killed off here is, as opposed to sort of the groups of patrons, is kind of like that reputation. So, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily particularly hateful or violent. I think it's just talking about, you know, a certain feeling of the past, you know, the certain ambiance of the past that's being killed off.
It's certainly visceral. Great word to describe that, I would say. So you've detailed some of the LGBTQ plus venues which have disappeared. Why are these venues disappearing?
So I think there are a myriad of reasons for this current downward trend. I think one of them being the cost of commercial rent in London, and especially in the West End, has skyrocketed. And of course, gentrification across London. Soho itself used to be known as a creative and bohemian area of London, but this is now a popular tourist destination with high-end restaurants. So it's a far cry from how it used to be in the 60s and the 70s. But there are also some reasons that, you know, you might perceive to be not quite so negative. There's a more perceived acceptance of LGBTQ plus people outside of queer spaces. So this means they're no longer the only place to go if you identify as such. You can go to a quote-unquote more mainstream place and you won't necessarily feel as much of a target anymore. We also don't need queer bars and pubs to meet other like-minded people, so there are dating apps including Grindr and Tinder and many others out there, which make it easier to find other queer people. You don't have to exist physically in a space. And then one theme among all the spaces that we have discussed in this series is that they're all centred around drinking, and fewer people drink today. The Office for National Statistics in 2020 reported that 23% of 18 to 24-year-olds are now teetotal, which is something that affects all nightclubs in the country, not just LGBTQ plus ones. And in order to help this, there is an element of the city being aware that this is an issue, because the Mayor of London has appointed a night czar to advocate for all of London's nightlife, and her name is Amy LeMay, and she herself is a queer woman. And bringing it back to our episode on Vauxhall and the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, she performs in a show there called Ducky, so she has a real tie to these queer spaces.
One of the reasons highlighted by Eliza for the trend of LGBTQ plus venues disappearing in London was the cost of commercial rent. Now, as an online university which provides real estate degrees and qualifications, it wouldn't be right to continue the podcast without a brief examination of this. To elaborate on this, I'm delighted to be joined by Brian Bickle, the Chief Executive of Shaftesbury PLC, a real estate investment trust which invests exclusively in London's West End. Hi, Brian.
Andrew, hello, nice to speak to you.
Good speaking to you. So we're looking at the real estate side of the disappearing spaces of LGBTQ plus spaces in London. But for a general overview, with rising interest rates and the continuing effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, is now the hardest time to be running entertainment venues in London?
Well, I don't think it's easy for any business. I mean, we've had, particularly in central London, we've been very hard hit by the last 2 years. And in the West End, which was always seen as pretty bulletproof in terms of, you know, upsets to trading patterns, it's been an incredible setback. But we're coming out of that quite quickly now. So there are at least lots of reasons to be optimistic. But all businesses are facing similar sort of problems in terms of not just the rent levels, business rates are not being addressed by the government. We're soon going to go back to full business rates. Staffing costs are going up rapidly. Input prices for every business are going up. So there are lots and lots of challenges there. I don't think it's peculiar to LGBT venues in any way, shape or form. But really, the key to getting out of this is to get people back and get people spending, because if you can get your top line growing again, and there's certainly a lot of pent up interest in, you know, having been locked up for 2 years, or not quite locked up, but you know what I mean, not being able to do these things we want to do, I think there's a determination to, certainly while things are going in the right direction, to get out and make up for lost time. So there's lots to be positive about, but there are challenges for everybody.
Okay, so you wouldn't go as far as saying it's the hardest time, but perhaps obviously it's been exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic, and it's just one of these waves, would you say?
Well, I think we've never really experienced anything as severe as this, and to be those businesses to be completely shut down for so many months at a time. And then even when they reopened, you know, they were well below capacity, people were nervous about going out. You know, we would say certainly in the West End, life only really got back to normal in the middle of July last year when the final restrictions went. Until then, we had over 18 months of no trade or limited trade. So, you know, these are early days yet. We all hope we don't go backwards in COVID pandemic terms. But, you know, we do seem to be set fair for a better period now. But say the cost pressures are there for everybody.
Mm. And talking about the positives and looking forward, what advice would you have for existing venues in the capital and indeed those seeking to run new venues such as bars and clubs?
Well, I think like all businesses, we have to adapt to a new world, and, you know, people's expectations of what they want to do with their time and where they want to spend their money have been changing very quickly over the last few years. It's just the way life is, really. And there's no doubt this last 2 years has really accelerated a lot of trends. So you've got to have something that, to get people out spending money, you've got to have something that is interesting, sets you apart. I think you need a very resilient business model that can cope with these sort of ups and downs. They shouldn't be as extreme as one we've just been through. And of course, these businesses do need a lot of capital. But from a property perspective, I think certainly for bars and clubs, the issues to really think about are planning and licensing. And often property people don't quite understand the slightly arcane world of alcohol licensing. But that really has a huge impact on, you know, the hours you can trade and things like that, your bottom line profitability. So you really have to take everything together. And, you know, planning is never a given for these things. There are, residents have a voice, and their voice gets louder these days in having a say about what they want to be on their doorstep, really. So, you know, the default position for a lot of residents is, I don't want a noisy bar or some sort of noisy late night venue. And you've got to find a way of having to deal with resident concerns, have a sensible management plan, to be respectful of your neighbours. Otherwise, you're just not going to win over the politicians who you rely on at the end of the day to, you know, deal with the planning issues and licensing.
And obviously, you're speaking as chief executive of Shaftesbury PLC and its West End venues, which you're dealing with. So do you have any advice which relates to your specific work with Shaftesbury, which could be of use for others?
Well, I think you've got to, in a way that certainly as the landlord, you need to work with the occupier to make sure everybody understands the sensitivity around some of these uses in relation to the wider community. And you've got to accept that, you know, there will be compromises along the way. But certainly for the landlord, we find it much better to work with the operators and make sure they, from our perspective, because we own big chunks of the West End, we've got over 300 bars, restaurants, cafes, pubs and clubs in the portfolio, is to make sure that these businesses are operated properly so they don't cause noise and disruption any more than is unavoidable. And that helps you with the local authority in building up a reputation for being a responsible landowner. you have to help local authorities out in this respect. I think that's what we've always done. And of course, the West End, you know, does have a residential community apart from the millions of people who turn up here every day. You know, that's so it's quite a challenge here to balance the needs of residents and, you know, one of the most popular destinations on the planet, certainly in the Western world.
And yeah, some good advice there about taking into consideration the local residents and what issues they find most important to them and obviously coming up with a plan which accounts for that, so you have a better chance of being successful. So moving on to the theme of this podcast series, do you have any knowledge about the specific issues relating to LGBTQ plus spaces in London? And if so, what's your take on the decline of such venues in recent years?
Well, I suppose I'd take a longer term perspective than perhaps a lot of people that are listening to this podcast. And, you know, I'm going to be 68 this year, so I've seen a lot of change in my lifetime. And looking back there, you know, as life got, I say, much easier, I suppose you'd say, from the LGBT community in the 70s and 80s, there was an explosion of LGBT venues. And, you know, that was all great coming through the 80s and the 90s, and even into the noughties. But, of course, life's changing now. People's patterns of behaviour are changing, and particularly in the gay community. And, you know, for gay men, frankly, if you wanted to go out and meet people, meet new contacts for whatever reason, be hanging around in a bar all evening, well, that doesn't happen anymore. And also, you know, a lot of people work very hard to get the LGBT community to where it is today in terms of acceptance, you know, not feeling that we needed safe spaces everywhere. We could be ourselves in mixed venues. I think that's as a generation thinking, growing up, feeling they don't need to self-segregate in LGBT venues. They like to have some around, but they're not as crucial as they were once upon a time. So it's this loss of trade plus perhaps an overexpansion in the previous 20 years. And so it's just general change in people's behaviours and expectations that is causing some of these venues to decline.
And that's something we've looked at in previous episodes as well, is the boom of the 80s tends to be what shines out of Eliza's research. And also this particular episode is providing our conclusion to this kind of investigation into what the current state of LGBTQ plus venues in the capital is and the history of it. So you mentioned there that obviously there's sort of greater integration with LGBTQ plus community. So therefore that need which was there isn't quite so prescient these days. So moving forward, do you think there is still an appetite for LGBTQ plus venues in the capital? And what kind of shape will these spaces take? What's your forecast?
Well, I think, as I say, there's been a decline over recent years. You would hope it's sort of come to an end now, really, and there's some sort of equilibrium in the market. Whether we see the return of sort of LGBT one-nighters in venues which are, you know, rest of the time are, you know, catering to different audiences, that could be a feature, really, because, say, that with less demand, it's harder to sustain unless you go to the really busy locations like the centre of the West End around Soho. It's hard to sustain the sort of business 7 days a week, which, back to where we started before, you need to have, you know, well, not always 7 days a week, but at least 6 days a week of good trading to cover your overheads, because these businesses do run at very high overheads. You just need the volume of people coming through the doors to make it work. So I'm optimistic that a lot of things will survive and prosper. But again, the people are looking for not necessarily there's a place for a spit and sawdust sort of bar. Other people are looking for different sort of ways of spending their time and money. You know, good restaurants, good wine bars, that sort of thing, as well as clubs that are appealing. So I think the operators have to work hard to think that, you know, the traditional formats are not as popular as they used to be. And you like hospitality generally, it's all about innovation, finding new ways to keep people entertained.
And that's, yeah, you talk about the kind of new spaces or innovative spaces which will appeal to audiences. And Eliza also touched upon in her research about the current state today. But there's also the digital spaces and that apps like Grindr and other apps which can connect LGBTQ plus community together can sometimes take the place of such venues. So just finally, if I may, you mentioned about the past with LGBTQ plus spaces. Are you a gay man yourself?
I am indeed, yes.
So can I ask just on that front, what do these spaces mean to you if you have frequented them? And is it necessarily a bad thing that we are losing some of these venues in the capital? Or is it just more a state of the world today, would you say?
I think it's more a state of looking at, it's more a question of, you know, looking at what the community really wants. And, you know, it is about what young people want to do as well. You know, all those people in there were out with me in the bars in the 70s and 80s and 90s are getting on a bit and probably go out less anyway. We're a less reliable customer base. So it's really very much focused on what younger people want to do. And they're growing up in a very different world than we did. A world of, I'm pleased to say, much greater tolerance and acceptance. It's not perfect, we all know that. But I can assure you, back in the 70s when I started going out, we'd never have dreamt we'd be where we are today. So this is positive progress in a way. We shouldn't knock it. And I don't think anybody would really want to go back to the days where you felt, you know, LGBT venues were the only places you could go to be yourself. Mm. And that wasn't, you know, well, it was the way it was, really. You'd learn to live with it. But we're in a much better place now, I would say. So I'm not too downbeat about it. And, you know, there are new things coming along as well. So you may have seen some press coverage recently. We're having a LGBT history museum opening up in King's Cross. So it's a project called Queer Britain, which I've been a supporter of since the idea kicked off a couple of years ago. But actually, you can have venues that combine a lot of things. Sort of LGBT history and culture, I think, is good to be preserved. And it now has a physical space. And with an idea that what happens in the museum in King's Cross can be shared around the country, so you can have travelling exhibitions and things like that to raise people's understanding about community. So, you know, this doesn't have to be all about hanging around in bars. there's lots more we could do in the real estate industry to get some presence in all sorts of places for the LGBT community. So I'm very optimistic about that.
And that is a lovely way to wrap up our interview. I wasn't aware of the museum, and really...
Go online, look for Queer Britain, and you'll read all about us.
Fantastic. Well, yes, do look out for that if you're listening. It really sort of chimes with the interview we had with the CEO of the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, that the sort of historic value of these venues can be preserved. That was the first venue in the capital to become Grade 2 listed, which certainly helps with retaining its status. And yeah, I'm really pleased to hear your positive views on the future of LGBTQ plus spaces, that it doesn't have to be a bar or what traditionally they were, but there's lots of new and innovative ways to connect the community. And that should be seen as a positive thing, as well as the greater tolerance you kind of touched upon there in your answer. So yeah, thank you for...
When it comes to the Vauxhall Tavern, I don't suppose they're going to put a pink plaque up there for me, but it was the first gay bar I ever went to, so it was a little place in my personal history. So, you know, I'm sure that will be a survivor.
Well, yes, that certainly came across that way. And when we were chatting to the CEO, James Lindsay, yeah, well, there we go. There's another link to one of our previous episodes when we were specifically looking at Vauxhall and the history there, first of all with the Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens and then moving into the current era with the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, which seems to be going from strength to strength. So, yeah, there's a place for those traditional places and also some newer openings as well, like the museum, as you've mentioned, and just generally the integration, which is being seen, that people can be themselves more freely in the general public space and not always be going to LGBTQ plus specific venues. So yeah, thank you very much for your time there, Brian, and for sharing your views on the real estate side of this. It's been very interesting.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.